Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Fitness fans rejoiced when New York City gyms were officially allowed to reopen September 2nd. Back in August, more than 1,500 gym owners filed a class action lawsuit against New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state attorney general over the hesitancy to allow gyms to reopen after nearly 6 months. The impatience was shared by both business owners and gym goers alike, many of whom were anxiously awaiting being able to hit the machines, get back on their yoga mat, see their workout partners again. But to others, this desire to pump iron during a pandemic is a little difficult to understand. Back in March, many were baffled to see New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio heading into his neighborhood YMCA just hours before the city went into pause. He got in one final workout. The incident was just one of many during the pandemic, which opened up questions about the appeal of gym and its place in American culture. Amanda Mull took on the topic in her recent piece, Why Americans Really Go to the Gym. She's staff writer at The Atlantic, where she covers health and writes the column Material World about consumerism and culture. And Amanda joins us now. Amanda, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
We want to hear from you folks. Were you eager to get back to the gym as soon as it opens? What is the number one thing drawing you back? Or are you skeptical about working out in a shared space? Has the gym become a source of conflict between you and family members or roommates heading back mid-pandemic? Give us a call, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet to us at All of It WNYC, or you can always send us an anonymous message on Instagram at All of It WNYC. So this story you write, you go out, you observe what's going on as the gyms are starting to open. What were some of your personal observations about the gym during this time, which led you to go out and check this out?
Well, it was very interesting to me that, like you said, with Mayor de Blasio, very early on, a lot of people sort of felt like he did, in that when the city announced that gyms were closing down along with restaurants and bars, a lot of people didn't rush out to get, you know, a last drink from their favorite bartender or a last dish at their favorite restaurant. They went out for their last workout. And I have never been a gym goer. I have always exercised other ways. So this struck me just immediately as sort of strange and something I was interested in understanding. And then over time, watching people switch to YouTube streamed workouts or buy Pelotons or order all of the dumbbells on the internet in order to try to do exercise at their own homes. So, you know, it was very clear that there was like a real urge to exercise, which is understandable in a health crisis. People want to have the control over that they can. But as this has gone on, it's become, you know, also clear that a lot of those people aren't simply satisfied with the equipment that they've bought or the streaming classes that they found, even if they enjoy them. A lot of people really do want to get back into the gym, and the phenomenon of these lines forming and you know, before dawn for people to get in to do a workout and make sure they had a spot in the lowered capacities of reopened gyms was just really fascinating to me. You know, it's the pandemic has been, I think, a really clear indication that everybody has their own idiosyncrasies and their own personal priorities and how they, find ways to enjoy life. And this was one I didn't expect.
What did you learn from speaking to people, those people standing in line waiting to get into the gym? What were their motivations?
Well, I became a lot more sympathetic to their cause because initially I was like, you know, work out at home a little longer. Why not? If you already have the equipment, you know, what could a few more weeks or a few more months hurt? But, you know, as I talked to people who were excited about going back or really waiting for the time when they felt that they were safe to go back, was that gyms are sort of a third place in a lot of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And a third place is, you know, loosely somewhere where you go that's not your home and it's not your job, where you can meet socially with people, where you can, you know, satisfy some of the psychological needs of being a human among people. in a way that is sort of leisurely and satisfying. And for a lot of people, that's coffee shops. For some people, that's restaurants or bars. For some people, that's gyms. They want to see the people that they work out with, that they worked out with before this all happened. They want to go see their favorite instructor and hear how she's been doing. A lot of them, you know, were cited that as an opportunity. And a bunch of people also said that getting out of the house and going to the gym, especially if you have kids at home, is just a great way to do an activity that's about you and about caring for yourself that they sort of de facto cannot participate in, that the kids are at home with you know, a different caregiver, and you are just having an hour or 2 hours to focus on doing something mm-hmm. that you enjoy. And I think that makes a lot of sense right now.
Let's take a couple of calls. Cass is calling us from Yonkers on line 2. Hi, Cass. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I love the gym, but when the gyms opened, I suspended my membership for 2 months because I want to stop and just wait and see what happens. Because like I told your screener, I thought people were nasty before COVID. And, you know, they're protesting so many things now in terms of mask wearing. They think washing hands is a good idea. So I kind of want to wait and see how this pans out. And plus, my father, thank goodness, he survived COVID. Oh, so the last thing I wanted to do was go to the gym and then bring something home to him.
Cass, thank you for calling in and being so candid. Let's talk to Eileen on line 1 from Weehawken, New Jersey. Hi, Eileen. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hear you great. What's going on in your world?
Are you there? Hi. I don't have a lifelong consistent history as a gym rat, but in the recent years, I found a pool workout that I was willing to show up for on a consistent basis. So now my gym has reopened, but the pool has not opened, and group classes have not started up. My, you know, membership is frozen. With their, you know, my desire. But I'm missing the presence of something that I can show up for that will get me consistently moving, because that's a challenge in
sure.
my home life to do that on a consistent self-generated basis. So it served, like you said, there's an external factor. There's social aspects, but really it was like I found something I was willing to do and willing to show up for that worked great for me. And I'm grieving that on some part, but also summoning my willingness to figure out what I can do here. Yeah.
Eileen, thank you for calling in and sharing and being really candid. My guest is Amanda Mull, staff writer at The Atlantic. We're talking about gym culture and the reopening of gyms during COVID. You know, you write in the piece, there's a psychological cycle of work and reward means that there's all the more to lose when gyms go dark. And Eileen was sort of getting to that, that there's a psychological loss that people experienced during COVID by having gyms close. What else, psychologically, not being able to go to the gym or that moment when the gym opens up, did you discover is important to think about?
Well, I think that you know, grieving the loss of a routine and wanting to gain that back is a very important element in all of this. Gaining back the little things that, you know, formed like the animating structure of our lives day to day before COVID is an enormous comfort to people. So I think that's really important. But also going to the gym for a lot of people is a way to express particular values, to, you know, to express that you are hardworking, to express that you are productive, to express that you value your health. And it becomes really important for people who hold those values and who believe that the gym is the way that they express those values to have a place where they go and perform them around other people who hold the same values. That is the basis of all kinds of different communities, is shared, the expression of shared values. And that happens at the gym. It's a place where people who express themselves that way and feel accomplished and successful that way, do that together, and you know, support each other and encourage each other. And those types of systems have, you know, been sacrificed in a lot of areas of life, professional, personal, whatever, through COVID. So I think for those people, the opportunity to get this specific one back is a really big deal.
Give us a call at 646-435-7280. Are you eager to get back to the gym? What's the number one thing drawing you back? Or are you still skeptical about working out in a shared space at this moment in time? Really interesting in your article, Amanda, you talk about the history of fitness in the United States. And you wrote, in the past 70 years, physical activity in America has transformed from a necessity of daily life into an often expensive leisure activity retrofitted into the foundation of people's identities. When did fitness and identity start to become attached?
This really happened in the 70s and 80s. And for people who grew up during that era or afterwards, it might be sort of surprising. I had a distance runner as a dad, so it seems like dads have been doing that forever, as far as I'm concerned. But when post-war life sort of reorganized the structure of American existence, people moved to the suburbs, people started using cars a lot more frequently, sidewalks started becoming less accessible in many of those communities. So the suburbanization of the American population and moving lots and lots of workers into offices out of more physically demanding jobs has really changed how Americans relate to physical activity in general. It used to be baked into commuting, to doing any kind of labor, to growing food, things like that. Now it is a thing that people have to sort of pursue a lot of times in order to get enough to maintain their cardiovascular health. So, you know, once it became clear that the diseases of lifestyle, heart disease, diabetes, things like that, quote unquote lifestyle, were becoming major killers in the United States, ways to shore up that part of people's health became very marketable. So you get people writing manuals on how to jog, how to do aerobics, things like that. And then you get exercise videos, your Richard Simmonses, your Jane Fondas. And then out of that grows, you know, gyms as we know them, grows personal training, grows boutique fitness, spin classes, Pure Bar, things like that. So over the course of 50 years, you get a whole industry that had never existed prior to it.
And when we talk about industry, it's a $31 billion industry by some statistics. When you think about what goes into this market, why is it so profitable? And is this something that we should be thinking about? Is that sort of a little bit of a cloud over the corner of this conversation of like, A, you have to be able to afford it, and B, maybe you can't afford it and you can't afford to rejoin if you lose your membership because some places make you pay huge initiation fees.
Right. The economic stratification of fitness is a real problem in America. So-called lifestyle diseases afflict less wealthy people at far greater rates than they afflict wealthy people. So you end up with a system where the people who would benefit most from having a safe space to jog, having some instruction on how to use a spin bike or how to do yoga, things like that. The people who would benefit most from that are completely cut off from access because access is mediated by money. So you get wealthy people who already have generally access to good medical care, access to nutritious food, and safe places to work out outside. And then you add on this additional tier of services that are very expensive and difficult to access on top of that. So the rich get healthier, everybody else suffers a little bit. Ultimately, that's because we've taken physical activity out of the day-to-day process of living life in America. Nobody walks anywhere because of the structure of the places that so many people live. It's just not possible or safe to walk anywhere. So you get problems that are then solved by money.
When you asked people, was it worth the risk to come back to the gym, why did they think it was worth the risk?
For a whole host of reasons. I think that people are at a point, especially in New York City, because the citizens of this city have done such a good job keeping infection rates low, keeping transmission low. I think that especially people here, after everything we went through, in the spring are really ready to, you know, to make some decisions about risk that that sort of test the edges of of what might be safe. You know, we've established that what we're doing so far is pretty safe. So trying to add additional activities back into that daily life, I think, is natural for a lot of people. And I think it can be done somewhat safely as long as we follow medical guidance and as long as they track infection rates and figure out where new infections are coming from pretty carefully. So I can sympathize with that desire.
The name of the piece is Why Americans Really Go to the Gym. It is in The Atlantic, written by Amanda Mull. Amanda, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.